In 8 minutes,
it's the
Pepper Needs New Shorts.
It's a Red Box Football Friday. Yeah, I know that we are recapping today and not previewing, but it's still a Red Box Football Friday, and you still need to wear your blue. Celebrate with your blue. There's no mystery here. You already know it's worth celebrating. You've got a victory in hand. 27-24, so strap it on. Show your support with Redbox Football Fridays. And remember, for movies and games, head to Redbox, the smarter way to watch and play. It's also Monday Morning Quarterback on a Friday. So Hugh Millen is here as we guide you through the 8 top stories of the morning. We call it the Ocho. And I think we'll start with a Seahawks win on Thursday Night Football.
Third down and 9. Blitz coming off the edge. Pass caught. Touchdown, Dixon.
There's our friend Joe Buck, now a good friend of the program.
Yeah.
On the call last night.
How'd that
night.
Go? Did you have an interview with him?
Yeah, we had an interview. He played a little Fast Money with us. Oh. Bucky handed him his ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't know who I was.
Yeah.
Nah, hurt my
there
feelings.
Was that hurt. There was that aspect of it.
The guy knows more baseball than anybody on the planet. And
let's not give him too much credit.
No.
Yeah, well, you. Second
I
most.
Mean, come on.
Second
most. Let's not insult present company here.
Oh, really? You're going to get tangled with him?
Yeah. Oh, they're and far and away. Chuck, not even close.
Chuck knew who I was.
Yes. Anyway, 27-24 was the final score in that game last night. Seahawks over the Green Bay Packers. Hugh, I'm going to throw a number at you here. Seahawks right now, Chris Carson, 580 yards rushing, Mike Davis, 372, Rashad Penny, 300. Three guys have more rushing yardage through week 10 of the season than any running back had last year for the Seahawks. I mean, there are a lot of keys to any victory. There are a lot of keys to perhaps overachieving, getting to a 5-5 record when you thought maybe this was a rebuilding or resetting here. But there is only one major key. This team can run the football this year. Doesn't even matter who's in the backfield.
Yeah.
They can run the football right now and start at times start doling out credit for that.
Yeah, and 4-11 to go in the game and not to give it up and be able to run for those first downs. It's exactly what they want to accomplish. It's been startling. I never would have anticipated they'd have this type of consistency, but it's a commitment. And I think Solari just has to have been that that catalyst, and you see they have less misassignments. So many times before, you could look and you could see, oh wait, guys unblocked, or you'd see a lineman going to a guy and then overreaching, and he knows he missed the block and what have you. So they just appear to be a lot more solid in terms of mentally, just kind of their communication, no questions better. But I think that the lone piece now is what's going to happen in that split end. You know, David Moore, that feels like the position that's kind of holding them back, because for them to have accomplished all this in the running game, it feels like a 3-year project that happened in 3 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No doubt. Well, Russell also an interesting night last night. He starts off horribly. He goes 3-for-8, 12 yards through a quarter of play. At halftime, they're still talking about how bad he looks, although I think he had course corrected by the second quarter, as evident by the fact that he went 10-for-11 in the second quarter for 78 yards and a touchdown. And then in the second half, leads the Hawks to the victory, 27-24. Here's Russell after the game.
You know what I have an obsession with? I have an obsession with winning.
Yes.
You know, that's the only thing that matters.
Great answer.
That's the only thing that matters. I can lay my head down tonight and feel pretty good about it.
Especially on a win.
Oh, yeah.
Winning pillow feels good, doesn't it?
It sure does.
He completes a game-winning drive. This is something that we've brought up this year, that the Seahawks once again keep finding themselves in the game at the end, but they're not pulling off those come-from-behind victories. Russell's not getting that game-winning drive. And, yeah, he left 4 minutes on the clock, so I guess you're not sitting there like MacGyver and you're going up against the ticking-down clock. Nevertheless, I got the ball in my hands late in the fourth quarter. and an opportunity to put us ahead in this game, and he pulls it off last night. What did you see there?
Well, 8:23 to go, and Seattle's down by four. They had had a pretty good drive the time before that started in the third quarter, 13 plays, 72 yards, and they get just the field goal. That was the one where they had the incredible run by Carson on third and one, and then they took the sack on a boot play the next, and so that set up a sequence that just led to a field goal. So, but for that sack on the boot play, they might have had two touchdowns because it was certainly impressive. As I said, 13-72. That was at the beginning of the fourth quarter, end of the third quarter. The 8:23 one, they get the ball at the 25-yard line after a field goal by the Packers. And the third and three where they hit Lockett, and he beat in man coverage Tremont Williams. And that was just a perfect play call because he had an in-breaking route against a guy on outside leverage. So they credit Schottenheimer and then Russell, of course, making the throw. But the next one, that was a big-time throw because they come back and get a similar type of a play, but it's against zone coverage, and they get 34 yards, and Lockett had that great catch. I guess some people say maybe it should have been reviewed.
Well, not only should have been reviewed, but, well, speaking of Joe Buck and then the guy in the booth.
Aikman?
No.
Oh,
the expert, Ferreira.
Yeah.
Said that, yeah, that's an incomplete pass, and McCarthy didn't even throw the flag.
Ooh. That's got to hurt.
Yeah.
That was a big play.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a huge play.
Well, and then third and 10 to get that, you know. It's funny. Fans, if there's a two-point play, just think of kind of your level of anticipation of a two-point play. Well, you're going to get on the edge of your seat and go, whoa, this is a net 2 points. Whoever wins this play. Well, over the course of a game, there can be as many as a handful of four-point plays. And I call a four-point play third down and goal or near the goal. And if you win, you're going to get seven. You lose, this is offensively, you lose, you can kick a field goal. And that seam route to Dixon, you could call that a four-point play.
Yeah.
Now, it was from the 16, so I'm kind of stretching that phenomenon a little bit. But third and 10 from the 16, obviously, if they don't get the completion, they're kicking a field goal. And so, big time play. Those three were the memorable plays, and it all happened in one drive at the end.
Wilson finished 21-31, 225 yards, and two touchdowns in the game. Now, as suggested, Packer fans this morning, and I think the national reaction to this game here in Seattle, we were reacting with, you know, hey, nice win, home team, mm-hmm. Nice job, way to get it back 5-5. Had to win it, got out there and win it. The national reaction is Mike McCarthy absolutely blew this game, including to the point where at 4th and 2, how do you not let Aaron Rodgers try to go for it with 4 minutes left in the game? Pete Carroll certainly appreciated it.
I was relieved. I really did like that they punted the ball to us right there, because we knew that we had a shot then, you know, to kill the game if we could and kill the clock, and we did it.
How much are you going to lay on Mike McCarthy's plate? I mean, you still have to convert, and then there's still a lot of time. You still got to go down and score, for goodness sake. Or at least get a field goal out of that for it to be successful. A lot of things have to happen afterward, but, man, people are calling for Mike McCarthy's job based off of that. The fact that he didn't challenge the Lockett play, and I think there are numerous other things that you kind of scratched your head over.
Well, first of all, the challenge play, there's a pretty clear mechanism. You got a coach up there, and if the network doesn't give him the feed in time, then you can't hold the head coach responsibility. There's no way the head coach knows. Now, if he's seeing something on the screen and he thinks that there's a reasonable chance, that's such a big play, maybe that's a time to just say, well, I'm not getting great information upstairs, but let me just wing it here.
Yeah.
I think Carroll did that with the David Moore catch a couple mm-hmm. weeks ago. So I think, depending on the mechanism and what he saw, I think I'd be willing as a Packer fan, in this case, to absolve him. But the 4th and 2, I can't criticize that because I was kind of thinking the same thing. you know, you got to punt. Usually defenses, they can get the stop in that situation. And they had one timeout. They can get the stop. I don't know what the probability is. In the aftermath, sure, you can say, well, of course you knew Seattle was going to run. But look at the Rams a week ago. You'd think the Rams could kill the clock, right? And then they try that end around.
Yeah.
And Robert Woods, on fly sweep, Robert Woods loses 6 yards, and they were able to get the three and out. The Seahawks defense was able to get it. So I think let's not forget all the times that the offense, knowing that they need to kill clock, they run the ball, the defense hunts them down, and they force the punt. So,
have to ever worry about me using hindsight there. I go for it every time on fourth down.
On fourth and two from?
Anywhere. I'm exaggerating.
Your own 1 yard line?
Oh. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but yes, you, I'm always going
at
for
that
it.
Time, you thought the Packers. I with the, a little bit more thought to it, I can see it. It makes a lot more sense. And Rodgers, after having bounced that ball, I bet there would have been a special determination for him to get that first down. I think that they would have. However, I do think so. I'm kind of wiggling out of the McCarthy thing on those two incidents, the lack of a challenge and the fourth down call. But I do think it is time for McCarthy to go. I think it's a stale. Yeah. He's been there long enough. Clearly, the relationship with him and Rodgers is frayed. And Aaron Rodgers, has more value than Mike McCarthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. It's,
they need a change.
Yeah, we're going to actually ask Peter King about that coming up here at the in the next segment. The defense steps up in the second half, no question about it. Aaron Rodgers looked like he was having his way with the Seahawks in the first half, puts 21 points on the board. They only score 3 in the second half. Here's Greg Bell on the Hawks D.
The Seahawks, I did notice, brought more blitzes in the second half, and that was one thing Ken Norton did that he didn't do in the first half. He brought Wagner and Coleman a couple times on double blitzes on third down.
I thought, in my estimation, it was more coverage than pressure that put the shackles on Aaron Rodgers, but I didn't see it from your perspective. I certainly don't view it the way you do, Hugh. I liked your take a little bit earlier that maybe it was trust or lack thereof in Aaron Rodgers' wide receivers that was as big a factor as anything in that offense bogging down in the second half, but it certainly bogged down in the second half.
Well, it did, and I do think it was primarily the coverages. Bucky and I were all talking in the break there, and like he mentioned, you think of when Aaron Rodgers was really flying high, Donald Driver and
Jordy Nelson.
Jordy Nelson. For
Olivia
sure.
Munn.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she wasn't getting those third down conversions.
No.
I think maybe she was
a little bit.
She might have inspired him.
I think those second decoy. Long little dumps, the kind of the decoy check down, she was good for that.
Greg Jennings ran better routes than her, too.
But there was a certain.
She was good for that.
The
awesome.
Words to live by, right?
Yeah,
she was good for that. Those receivers, when they had things going, there was a certain aggression that Rodgers had, and he wasn't hesitating. I mean, he knew exactly. He could back shoulder throw. He was willing to operate in the yellow zone. Think of it like this. Quarterback, you got a green light, your brain says throw it. You got a red light, your brain says no, he's covered. But there's that yellow light that the best ones operate. You're living in the yellow light. Drew Brees is throwing to guys in a yellow light all game long.
Mm-hmm.
And Rodgers was that way too. But to operate in the yellow light zone, you better have that trust. And there's no question he's significantly lacking trust in these guys, unlike the receivers he's had in the past.
We do want to give some credit to the defense, which we will in a little later. I want to talk about Bobby Wagner, the pass rush, Frank Clark, and many other aspects of the Seahawks defense last night coming up on the show. College football this weekend. Arizona will be at the Cougs, so huge game for the Cougs in terms of their national ranking and any shot that they might have at the playoff at the end of the year, but it really won't affect the Apple Cup, which is forthcoming. UW's going to host the Beavers. That's the only game that can affect the importance of the Apple Cup, because if somehow UW loses to Oregon State, then we won't have a Pac-12 division title on the line when the Apple Cup is played next Friday. So, Hugh, Coach Baird convince you that we shouldn't overlook the Beavers, or what?
No.
No.
No, I'm a fan.
Nope.
No. I think if it was down in Corvallis, because they have had a penchant for doing wonky stuff. Although, the Colorado game, was that not at Colorado?
No, it was here.
I should know that. No, I'm sorry, Colorado and Oregon State. Oh. Oregon State came back from, I believe it was 31-7 down. But no, I don't. No.
No.
No, I think
that's the short answer there. No.
Rodents.
Yeah.
Now, the Arizona, I think Washington State is deserving of the title, the best team in the conference right now, because they played the best. But Arizona at times can peak at a level that is just about as good as anybody.
Well, so, they're playing better now. That's for sure. Yeah. Much different team than they were at the beginning of the year. All right, coming up next, Peter King will join us. We'll get his perspective on the Seahawks' 27-24 win over the Packers last night. And we'll get you ready for a few other Sunday matchups as well with our NFL Insider, Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Available in every state.
Now back to Football Friday, powered by Redbox, the smarter way to watch and play on your home for college football Saturdays and the NFL. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
I was 8 years old and running with a dime in my hand.
Oh, it's going to be good to talk a little review of a Seahawk game with Peter King, our NFL insider. And I think Peter is going to be very pleased to hear that Hugh Millen is in on this interview this morning. Peter, say hello to Hugh.
Are you saying that Hugh Breedlove Millen is in studio?
I'm saying that.
That's the man.
Hello, Hugh.
Good morning, Peter. How are you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm doing just great. It's a happy Friday here with I would assume an entertaining win from a national perspective.
That was a totally, totally fascinating game for so many reasons. Can we just start with the McCarthy decision to punt on 4th-and-2?
I was hoping you would.
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, you're going to be judged on your record, on your wins and losses. And in regular season games since Christmas Day 2015, the Green Bay Packers are 21-22-1. And when Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback for 35 of those 44 games, it's not good enough. And I think that in two of the last three losses that they've had, there have been things that just point to the head coach. One, at the Rams, when Ty Montgomery, instead of taking a knee 2 or 3 yards deep in the end zone, with one timeout and 2 minutes and 5 seconds left for Aaron Rodgers, to think he couldn't have gotten 40 or 45 yards in two minutes with one timeout to kick the winning field goal against and maybe the best team in football. That was a big, big loss. And look, McCarthy didn't take the ball out of the end zone. Ty Montgomery did. But your team cannot make that mistake in that situation. And then last night, I would just say this, 4 minutes, 20 seconds left, one timeout left, ball on your own 33, 4th-and-2. So if you punt it away and Seattle makes two first downs, the game is over. But if you go for it and you make it, hey, that's good. You keep going downfield and maybe you win the game and whatever. But even if you go for it and miss it, you're handing Seattle the ball, let's say, at your own, you know, at their 33-yard line. At the Packers 33. And I'm playing games here. But if you hold them, because Seattle's probably going to run it twice, right there, all right? So if you hold them and they kick a field goal, it means that you've still got the ball down 6 with, let's say, 2 minutes to go or 1:40 to go, mm-hmm. and Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback. That's why I thought it was a terrible decision by Mike McCarthy.
And I actually was listening to you and Mike Florio this morning on KJR at 6 o'clock, and you said something that I loved. It was music to my ears, that Mike McCarthy afterwards says, I played the percentages, and as you...
I played the numbers, is what he said.
As you put it...
And he didn't.
And he didn't. It's not. It's statistically not the move to make, right?
Exactly. I mean, look, I work with Pro Football Focus on a part of my column every week, and I dashed off an email to them this morning, and I said, I want to take Mike McCarthy saying, I'm playing the numbers, and then I want to take that statement right there, and I want you guys to tell me what the numbers are. Hey, look, they might come back and say McCarthy made the right call. I don't think they will, but if they do, that's what I'll write. But sometime later today, they're going to send me a little report, and we'll find out analytically and statistically by the numbers, fourth and two, A, what are the chances of making fourth and two, first of all? B, if you go for it, what are the percentages you're if you go for it and make it, what are the percentages you're going to win? If you go for it and miss, what are the percentages you're going to win? So I'm going to find out those things, and you'll read it Monday in my column.
You know, the play before, Peter, Aaron Rodgers had...
Terrible play by Rodgers.
Yeah, unexplain it, right? I mean, just he bounces that ball out there. He got the man coverage look. They in that offense would call that drag slant. I mean, it's something that he's been doing his whole career. And and then with no pressure, he just Steve Sachs's that thing out there. I wonder if that impacted the thinking for McCarthy. Did he reveal that, or what's your sense on that?
I don't know. I watched his press conference last night, and I don't think he was asked that. I don't remember him saying anything about it, so I don't know. But, Aaron Rodgers has been the starting quarterback of this team for 11 years. And, if you watch that game last night, I mean, first of all, he made two all-time throws.
Yep.
His one going to the right where he hits the tight end nobody's ever heard of at the goal line, and a ball that travels, like, I think, 57 yards in the air, and is hit. You know, the guy could have been wearing a postage stamp on his chest, and Rodgers hit it. It was just an incredibly well-thrown ball. But it's possible that his better throw was to Devontae Adams later in the game when he threw the ball even farther in the air while he was getting dragged down, and Devontae Adams was being held on his left arm and basically caught this ball one-armed, but it was right there. And look, I'm not here to say, oh, my God, the Packers, greatest team in the history of man. They are incredibly flawed. but all I'm saying is I shook my head last night when I was thinking about that decision that McCarthy made that I think ultimately has a chance to lead to his downfall.
NFL Insider Peter King with us. It's brought to you by Zeke's Pizza. I want to talk about the flip side because I don't want to just put it all on the Packers blue.
Of course not.
Yeah,
hey,
I want to give some love over
Seattle,
here.
How about coming back from being down 14-3 and opening the game with three abysmal series?
Yeah.
Terrible. And then Russell Wilson throwing the ball 6 feet over a wide open Doug Baldwin's head in the end zone, which he never does. He never does that. And I was just thinking to myself, this has the makings of a real bummer of a game for Seattle. But it's just like this with Russell Wilson. One of the reasons why I have so much admiration for his game is that nobody in the NFL, and I mean nobody, puts horse crap in the rearview mirror better than Russell Wilson. I mean, he's this first three series, people probably want to just bury their heads after watching that. Maybe a fourth series. I'm trying to remember now, but he played steady Eddie football after that. And in the second half on those last couple of important drives, he made three or four right on the money throws he has to have to win the game. And so I thought he really did well. And you know what? Give credit to Solari. Give credit to that offensive line and to that running game, because it's, you know, we were always under this assumption that Tom Cable was sort of a guru of offensive lines and that he's going to make chicken salad out of this and all that. And now I think Mike Solari comes in and basically in my opinion, and again, I don't mean to kill Tom Cable, but it's a black mark on Tom Cable as a coach.
Well, the Raiders look so good though with him.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, that I just thought that, okay, Effetti's a waste. You go down the list of guys who haven't worked out there, and maybe they just needed a new voice. And kudos to, sometimes when you're the coach of a team, when you're the GM of the team, you're Pete Carroll, you're John Schneider, sometimes you got to throw people overboard. That's all there is to it. And that's what they did, and they're clearly better for it.
You know, and listen to you, Peter, it sounds like you're a local guy, you know, and you're a Seahawks analyst. I if you know the other 31 teams this well, that's pretty cool, because you've got a handle on this football team. But, you know,
Hugh, it's really not hard what I just said.
I mean, understanding the Solari and the Gibbs. And now Russell has that come up a few times short this year, and so I think – you know, that was Russell kind of answering some of the failings they've had. But, you know, in a broader sense, maybe you can comment on this. I've termed it Pete Carroll 3.0, because we know he had the Jets and the Patriots failings. And then he kind of, I don't know, he went off to Tibet and he smoked some incense and he kind of found himself, his holistic approach. He took it to USC. Yeah. He was wildly successful. He took it to the first iteration, the 2010, 2000 through 2012 center drafts. He and Schneider just worked magic.
Yeah.
And they had that run. Now there's been so much of that nucleus lost that I feel like, you know, they say back in when you were a kid on the playground, the rubber match. This is almost like the rubber match. Yeah. If he can do this and retool this team, that's going to be emphatic, at least in my own mind. What's your thoughts on Pete Carroll and this iteration of the Seattle Seahawks?
Well, the one thing I would say about this that If I were judging the success of this team over the Schneider-Carroll era, I find it amazing in a very, very good way that when Pete Carroll got the gig, they did this the opposite way, right? They a lot of teams will hire a GM, and then that GM either will go pick somebody, or the GM will cooperate with the owner and pick somebody. Mm-hmm. But in this particular case, they kind of did it the opposite. Pete comes in, and Pete and John were basically, that was kind of a shotgun marriage. You know, because they didn't know each other well. They certainly hadn't worked together before. And so I think when I found that Pete Carroll is a guy who would be cool to work with, is when John Schneider fell in love with Russell Wilson. He brought him back he brought the case for Russell Wilson, this short quarterback, back to Pete Carroll. And Pete Carroll totally fell in love with him, the same as John Schneider did. And most traditional football coaches would say, I don't want a 5'11 quarterback, or whatever his actual height is.
I don't want that.
I don't want a 6 foot, a 5'11 and a half guy. But he bought into it. And he said, essentially, I trust John Schneider. I love this guy, and let's go. And they did. And that's one of the things about this relationship between these two guys. Hey, look, Hugh, you would know this a lot better than I would. But in my opinion, I think that they both wanted to wipe the slate clean in the defensive backfield. And that's one of the reasons why they didn't. They wanted Earl Thomas back, but they didn't want to give him any more money, because, you know, you don't pay players for what they have done in the NFL. You pay players for what they will do. And that's why that whole bitter thing happened.
Yeah, and I don't think that they felt like Earl was a guy, for a few reasons. You know, I think the team doesn't respond to him as well as a lot of people think. You know, he showed up at that wedding, you know, wearing a crown and you know, with no shirt on. And I just feel like they say, you know what, we can just quietly move on. And by the way, Russell Wilson, 5'10 and 5'8 at the combine, for whatever that's worth. So
okay, it is remarkable. There you go.
Yeah, yeah. They measure you an eighth of an inch there. So that's the most accurate height reading I think a athlete's ever going to get. But it's remarkable that he's had the kind of career at that height.
Peter, I want to ask you one national question before we let you go, and it's a simple one. How many points will be scored Monday night?
4,016.
Very good. I'm going to take.
It's really going to be. It's going to be a really fun game. The one I think the key element in this game when they are you're doing the autopsy on this game plan from both teams afterwards. This is just a gut feeling because I love Sean McVay and I think they're going to score in the 30s easy. But I like Kansas City a little bit more in this game because of the absence of Aqib Tlaib. I just think the Chiefs right now, I watched them last Sunday. I was at Arrowhead. And the way they spread the field and create a monstrous amount of problems for the secondary and basically for your linebackers as well, because you can't play seven defensive backs. You know, they create so many problems because it's like the two safeties back there. You know, Arizona was playing a lot of two deep, and they kept wondering, okay, who am I doubling here? Am I doubling Kareem Hunt? Am I doubling Tyreek Hill? What do we do about Kelce? What do we do? You know, so you really wonder after a while. It's a basically, I talked to all their guys after the game, and they kept saying, hey, pick your poison. One week it's going to be one guy, one week it'll be the next. So that's just my gut feeling. And I think the absence of Cooper Kupp is really going to hurt the Rams. So, but we'll see.
Peter, thank you. We appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend, and we will talk to you soon.
All the best, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
All right. Peter King, brought to you by Zeke's Pizza. Did you know that Zeke's Pizza now delivers great local craft beer as well as outstanding pizza? You won't even have to leave your house this weekend while you're watching all the games. Zeke's has three easy ways to order for delivery. You can download an order on the Zeke's Pizza app. You can log on to zekespizza.com, or you can call 206-285-8646. Thank you, Zeke's Pizza. Coming up next, we haven't even mentioned the words Bobby Wagner to the president of the Bobby Wagner fan club yet today. So we'll do that with Hugh Millen next.
Yeah, I was really fired up about that, you know, because we know these guys are hard to sack, and it's hard to get to Aaron. He just doesn't let you have him. But it was a lot of guys working at it, a lot of four-man rushes. We did pressure some tonight, but most of the sacks came off of four-man rushes, I believe. And that's really good. Guys worked together and we spread it around to a lot of guys. Frankie had another great game, just causing problems.
Pete Carroll talking about the Seahawks defense last night, stepping up at halftime. Aaron Rodgers, 245 yards of offense for the team, the Packers team, in the first half, only 115 in the second half. 21 points scored in the first half, only 3 in the second half. And the Hawks win it by a final score of 27-24. By the way, it's a free movie Friday thanks to Adam Tickets. They want to give you a chance at free movie tickets. Text BOOTS, BOOTS, to Adam1, ATOM1, for your chance to win. Download the Adam Tickets app right now because they're giving new users $5 off their first movie with promo code RADIOVIP. Mike Holmgren will join us at 9 o'clock. We got our Monday morning quarterback in here, Hugh Millen, so I'm sure we're going to get back into the offense displayed in this game. So I wanted to spend some time, Hugh, on the defense. And I know that you're the president of the Bobby Wagner fan club. I'm a vice president. I am a dues-paying member of the
Bucky
club.
Bucky the treasurer?
No, Bucky's just a new member.
I'm like the water boy for the I hook you guys up with water during your
equipment game. Equipment manager.
Appreciate that.
Equipment manager. Sorry.
Towels.
Towels.
Jocks.
No. Should I draw the line? Jocks.
Okay, well.
Yeah. Sorry.
So I know a lot of people are talking about Frank Clark and 2 sacks and 10 now on the season, and the team gets 5 sacks, and we've talked a little bit about the secondary stepping up and coverage sacks more than they really were, pressure sacks last night. But no matter how well those guys play out there, all I'm brought to back to every game, Hugh, is Bobby Wagner's the best player on the field.
Well,
I thought
he
was excellent again last night.
Yeah, you know, he had that kind of eye-popping tackle where he just, it's why you do power cleans and squats all throughout the year, to have that type of strength. And
why I do?
Well, does. One does if you're a middle linebacker playing in the National Football League. I mean, that's, you know, if your business card says middle linebacker in the NFL, that's you're a bad, tough dude. And then when you're the best, you're exceedingly bad and tough. And that he's just all of that. And I made the comment without a ton of thought about a month ago that Bobby Wagner could well be the best tackler in the planet. And I gave it a lot of thought after I said it, and I haven't given any reason to take those words back. And I qualified it by saying, just if you had two categories, show me how good you can tackle in space against really athletic players, and then show me what type of thump you have between the tackles and how forceful, how much you can bring the physicality and execute forceful tackles. What do they say in boxers? You know, it's not just punches landed. You know, it's just, you know, damaging punches, right? You know, like Bobby Wagner can damage you when he tackles. But if you want to try and pull him out, get him outside the numbers, and let some wiggly guy try and he's going to hogtile that guy and get that guy.
He was
anchored.
Covering Davante Adams 30 yards down the field last night.
He moves like a safety, you know, and he hits like a. You know, he's got the strength of defensive linemen. I mean, it's a remarkable talent. And then you add his competitiveness, his durability.
Leadership.
Yeah, you know, now he's had, it's funny because my eyes always seem to follow him when I watch the defense. And he'll sometimes try and shoot a gap. I mean, he's not without making mistakes. But, you know, that's like saying, does a baseball player get a hit every time he goes up? I mean, you know, it's so conspicuous when he makes a mistake. And generally when he does is he's trying to make a big play and shoot through it, you know, and then he thinks there's going to be an opportunity to shoot a gap, and then it just kind of gets gummed up. So that would be on a short list of complaints, and it's a really long list of just – the admiration for him. I don't know. It's going to be something to behold. We'll be talking about him 20 years from now.
As a quarterback, if you all of a sudden see Davante Adams and he's going to be covered by the middle linebacker, don't you usually think that's a mismatch? And I think there might have been a little bit of PI on that one 30 yards down the field, but still, he was right in his back pocket. I mean, is that
the fact that he can run just to be there, right?
Just to be there.
Yeah. And I
just
think,
to have the balls to think he can
I think,
be there.
Well, but they asked him to do that. They ask him to turn and he's customarily in what's called the hook zone in their zone. The hook zones are the areas closest to the middle of the field, and then you have the curl zones that are a little bit wider, and then you have the flats, and that's how shallow zone defenses are designated. So he is scarcely ever in the curl zone. He's a hook zone guy, and so he has to turn and run, and on those deep over routes when teams are trying to go deep play action. So he's got to be the guy that just stop right there. If I said deep play action to you, that already is an indicator that he's got the primary run responsibility. So if they try and suck him up and then put a lightning fast receiver in behind on a crossing route, the way that's designed is he's got to go get underneath that. And it's just a remarkable, just the asking. I mean, if you just started whiteboarding with the defense coordinator and say, okay, we're going to ask him to do this, and then we're going to ask him to do that. And then you say, really? How could one guy be humanly capable of doing that? I don't want to overstate it. They ask him to do a ton.
Right.
And that would be an example of that.
I also appreciated the veteran Frank Clark, I'm in a contract year move last night, where he already had the two sacks and then celebrated like he had his third, when clearly Jacob Martin had it before he got there.
Well, three of the guys. There's one sack.
Celebrated.
Three guys are, you know, I half expect them to point their thumbs at the back of their, and, you know, turn to the press box and say, hey, it was me.
Say my name.
But you know this, like in baseball where, you know, there's this feeling of, all right, we're up 16-2. I went 4-for-4, And you're like, don't take me out. I want to go 5 for 5.
Yeah.
I love that, like, greedy aspect. And I particularly love it with pass rushers. It's like, sometimes a guy gets his one, and you can see him like, all right, I got my one for the game. No, I don't even want 5 to be enough. I want you to go get a 6, like Derek Thomas. I want you to go rack up 8 before it's all said and done. I love that about a pass rusher. So I think he has that, too.
I agreed. Everything is motor. He's been a better pro than I would have thought. The games I scouted when he was at Michigan, he was either, I don't know, maybe he played all his games at Purdue and Northwestern or something where they have the long grass and late in the year and he's all bundled up and he just didn't look as twitchy. He's far quicker. You could see the power in his college tape. There's a reason this guy's a second round pick who now, if you could redo the draft, he'd be a top 10, right? He'd be a top 5 if you could redo the draft. So Seattle saw something there and others missed. And I'm trying to suggest what others
may have
missed.
Some people took him off the board.
That point, yeah, you don't want to avoid the elephant.
His name did not come up a lot because I do a lot on the NFL draft.
Yeah.
And his name was not coming up as a first round pick. By any of the experts. I mean, it was a shock to everyone when he went in the second round. And I think
the incident?
Because he didn't even play that last season.
Yeah.
Because people thought that the incident was going to be so terrifying that people were just going to stay away from him entirely. Nobody trusted the character. You know, if you want to believe that the Seahawks did their homework, if you want to look at it glass half full, that we did our homework and we liked the player, we liked the person and the player, and so that's why we took him. Or if you want to look at a glass half empty, they don't care about conduct. They just wanted a beast and they saw a beast on film.
Well, I think absent the incident, I don't think he's a first rounder. He wasn't perceived to be a first rounder, if I recall.
His name was not coming up at all a first rounder.
At any rate,
wasn't coming up as a second.
The one thing I'd like to do, I'd like to see him switch from white gloves to black gloves.
Okay. Why?
I think your hands, you want to be a little bit less conspicuous, where your hands are.
That's why Michael Jackson.
He'd say, well, hang on. If you have white hands against a white jersey, maybe. But
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that hamburger helper guy always was getting called for holds.
The Michelin guy, right?
Yeah. No, they say Michael Jackson wore his hiked up his pants that high because he wanted people to see the white socks so that you would look at his feet and what he could do with his feet.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I do that too.
It's all an illusion. Yeah. All right, coming up next, Coach Holmgren's going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on last night's 27-24 win over the Green Bay Packers.